All right, guys, welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and I've got John on the phone once again. And today we're going to discuss some things that you can expect during the contest, especially during the first couple of weeks, a couple of the major questions that have been coming up, and also a couple of the hang-ups we've seen in the past that guys are running into when it comes to actually building up some momentum. So, John, I know you had a couple of things you wanted to bring up right off the bat, so let's go ahead and dive right in.
Sure. Okay, so I guess we should explain that the coaching calls we used to do as teleseminars, now they're going to be the podcasts themselves. So over the next 10 weeks, we'll be setting up a way for you guys to get your contest specific questions over to us, and we'll answer them via the podcast. So this will be it's not a huge difference, but basically I just wanted to explain that that's how we'll be going this time around. And so other people who aren't in the contest, we can kind of listen in and as to how everyone's doing and, you know, what's been coming up and what the issues are. So as far as this one goes, though, everyone is, you know, I guess not quite 2 weeks in. They're a week in. And we're discussing I wanted to discuss the difference between the three workouts. So the foundation workout, a couple people were asking about rest periods. So the foundation workout is designed as a 5-day-a-week system, but you don't actually have to do it 5 days in a row if you don't want to. The 2 days off is pretty important because day 5 of any 1 week and day 1 of the following week are basically the same muscle groups and the same exercises. So it's important to take those 2 days off, but you can definitely take a day off somewhere in the middle of the 5 days as well. So even though that means it won't technically land exactly within a week, that's fine. There's a week is the only way to actually categorize it. It's just 5 days with 2 days off in between 5 day chunks. But those 5 days of working out can easily have another rest day somewhere in the middle. So by the end of 12 weeks, you won't actually be completely finished 12 weeks if you add in an extra rest day. You'll probably be, 10 and a half weeks, 11 weeks through it, but that's fine. So for anybody who's doing the foundation, if you feel as though another rest day is required in there, you can certainly take one. And also, since it might feel like a bit more volume for people who aren't familiar with it, you may feel you need the rest day at the beginning, like in the first 6 weeks, like an extra rest day, and then you may be able to progress to just the 5 days straight. Now, some people may find 5 days in a row sounds like a lot, but it's totally doable, and in the last contest, lots of guys were going 5 days in a row. Some guys were even doing six on some weeks. So it's not unheard of. Again, this is the under-conditioning versus overtraining thing. I don't think 5 days of working out is overtraining, but some people may not be quite ready for it yet. So you may need to ramp up into it, so to speak. And also, if you actually analyze the workouts, some of the days are relatively minimalistic days, like day one and five are just a bench press squat day, so there's actually nothing else on those days. So if beyond the physical fatigue, those days are actually pretty easy to get through from a mental standpoint because there's nothing really else to think about. All you have is two exercises to think about. And I actually find that's pretty nice on those type of days where there's just not much to think about, whereas some of the other days there's more exercises to do, and it just seems – it's weird, but it seems like there's a bit more stress, so to speak, just knowing that there's, six, seven, or eight exercises to tackle in 1 day. So those days, even though bench press and squat are two big exercises, those days actually aren't as mentally fatiguing simply because there's just nothing else to think about.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm kind of the same way. I much rather, do one exercise and build on that, than doing, some of the other stuff that we get into. I mean, both are obviously highly beneficial, but as far as having to think about anything or bring something in the gym and remember anything, it's definitely a little bit different. Plus, it just doesn't seem as long, even though that seems weird to me. But it seems like I'm in the gym longer when, like, from a mental standpoint, when where you've got all the other stuff that you're doing, but when you're doing just the two, it seems time just flies by a lot quicker.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. It's definitely, I mean, it's obviously anyone who's done powerlifting recognizes the powerlifting sort of overtones throughout the way that program's designed. And, Yeah, it's just, I mean, literally it's intermittently 3 power days with sort of 2 AI days in between. And that's kind of sort of, if you actually wanted to discuss its structure, that's more or less how it's structured. And so those 3 days, so days 1, 3, and 5 should feel completely different than days 2 and 4. And that's why they're designed that way. And, you know, and I mean, you can decide if you're, for anyone who's on that program, you can decide where you want to drop your rest days. My only kind of rule, so to speak, and is to have every day 5 with 2 days off to the following day 1. And it just, I mean, that's only because you'll notice that you're just going to need it that way.
Right. So I guess let's talk about the 3-0 edition of the workouts, or the, I guess, rehash. You know, we're getting a lot of questions about that. And just to kind of say this really quickly, the 3.0 workouts and the kind of rejiggering is available right now. However, the complete 3.0 package won't be available until October, because we've got some more significant pieces that we're putting in, just so you know. So you'll be able to have, like, everyone has access, even if you purchase, you know, today, you'll have access to the actual foundations and a 3.0 workout, which you'll be able to choose between depending on your level of weightlifting. I think we should probably back up and touch on that as well, how to choose between the two before we get into the actual 3.0 update as well.
Yeah, well, the foundation is for, like we said, novices. People haven't really been training for much longer than a year or two. And you could even use it if you've been training for a long time but sort of haven't been consistent, and, you know, consistency's been an issue. You can start back on the foundation. If you've been pretty consistent training, like you haven't really missed much more than a week or two in the last couple of years, then you probably want to go straight to the main Adonis 3.0 workout. And the distinction, and a lot of people are wondering about ATS. ATS is a separate thing. It's not part of the main program, and you're not supposed to get to it until you've completed the main Adonis 3.0 workout. So that's for anyone who's still wondering where ATS fits in. It comes after you've done the 3.0. So, for example, if you've been training for years, but it's been really sporadic and intermittent, then I say go straight to the foundation, then go to the 3.0, and then after that go to ATS. And that should run you through almost a full year of training. And then after that, the cluster cycles, which are like really advanced stuff. So I mean, that's kind of how, on a real high level, that's how you choose what to go towards.
Right, exactly. Okay, so let's discuss the actual 3.0 restructuring and what it means for everybody, and kind of why we did it based on, you know, kind of our overall philosophy.
Oh, well, the workouts themselves got changed into what, I mean, even though we did have it broken down into 3 components, it was starting to make sense to have one systemic flow, because, I mean, we, and anyone who's listened to our stuff kind of understands that we view weight training and your workouts for muscle building, and your diet's what you use to burn fat or to get rid of body fat. Now, with that said, bigger people can, like heavier guys with more fat to lose, any extra exercise, any extra movement in general is going to burn significant calories simply because your body's heavy, and that's a lot of work to do. Whereas a thinner guy or a guy with less fat, movement itself starts to burn less calories. It's the law of diminishing returns. So as you lose weight, exercise causes you to lose less weight. It's kind of a sort of a self-perpetuating thing there. So if a 300-pound guy goes for a half-an-hour walk, or a 150-pound guy goes for half-an-hour walk, the 300-pound guy is burning way more calories because he's moving so much more mass. So we originally had the workouts designed to get the bigger guys who had more to lose to do a bit more movement. And then, you know, over time it just seemed as though it better spend the time in the gym focusing on muscle building, and even though there's a lot of movement built into any of the programs, we don't want people worried too much about going back to the gym and getting more cardio in, and start worrying about the burn side of the equation versus the eat side of the equation. So we didn't want people splitting their attention, not realizing that the real results for weight loss are going to be coming from diet more so than any extra work in the gym. So the 3.0 flow pattern is more of a true periodization pattern, and it'll work for, I mean, it'll work fine for everybody. And it also exposes, people to rep ranges and exercise kind of volume style that guys who were only in build would have never seen. And same with guys only in burn would have never made it to certain parts of build, not for a while. So now everybody's getting, a broader exposure, I guess you could say. In this, a broader exposure to different rep ranges and different chunks of the program that they technically, if they followed it exactly as written, would have never been exposed to.
Right. And let me kind of roll back really quickly. The main reason, if you haven't picked it out yet, just for us to spell it out, it's not because there was anything wrong with the old way, because there wasn't. It worked fine. People were getting results. But from a free range condition, and it was just, we were getting a lot more confusion. Not tons of confusion, but just a lot of questions about each one, you know, how all this stuff. And I thought you said this, but you have this. And same thing with the interval training. That's why we pulled that out as well. It just, all these things just introduced not only a lot more confusion, but people really trying to chase more with more and actually ignoring diet.
We've just streamlined it. Like, anyone who worked their way through all three progressions will recognize that they overlap. So the middle one is an overlap. So build and burn was an overlap of the build program and the burn program.
Right.
And then the burn program by itself and the build program by itself had a module that neither – they had a couple modules that overlap, but a module – each one had a module unique to it. So we've kind of restructured it. And the actual – the conditioning circuits in the burn module now are the fourth rage module.
Right.
So now everyone's going to be exposed to, now everyone will be exposed to all of it, like Brad said, there was quite a bit of overlap to begin with. Now we've just streamlined the process completely.
Yeah. I mean, part of any system, and I say this time and time again, part of any system's usability. And if you don't take that into consideration, I mean, that's just insane. So, I mean, if you've noticed, this is the third major re-release. Or release / re-release, probably the sixth overall where we've actually made a change based on confusion or feedback. Not that things were significant, but things that just, or not things that really conflicted, but things that just had certain confusions and things that people were running into. So you're just basically looking at how people are, you know, working, interacting, what the questions were. You know, we do just like we tell you guys, we chose to pull out. We took away stuff before we added stuff, and it seems to work a lot better now. And we get less questions, and people are. It allows them to be a lot more focused and actually understand and get exactly what they're supposed to do from day one and hit the ground running. So, Okay, so let's talk about week one and two. I mean, what are the expectations for a person? Especially, let's assume that people. Really have never done anything like this before. I mean, obviously there's a time limit. There's a lot of different types of pressures. You know, obviously, you know, there's some social conditioning and social pressures out there that people have to deal with, which with time pressure is a lot easier. So what's going through people's minds right now? What are the big challenges and how can we help them?
One of the big things was when we interviewed Ron, he really brought to light the idea of getting, a team together or targeted social support. So don't just announce what you're doing to everybody, but recruit a couple close people who are going to be on your side for the 12 weeks. And that goes a long way. When you've got somebody who's close to you, who's looking to help you out, it's a lot better when they're, you know, let's say you're going to eat something and they're looking at you knowing that that doesn't sort of fit into your plan for the day. It's better that they discourage you from doing that and keep you on track than they encourage you to, you know, lose sight of your goal. So having people on board is good. So if you're in the contest right now and you feel like there's not a whole lot of people like in your immediate surroundings that are on board with it, you know, recruit at least one person who's close to you who you can kind of talk about it with. Because, you know, there'll be days where it's challenging and you need some. I mean, the community is great for it because everybody else is doing it too. But it also helps when you've got somebody in front of you who can help because. I mean, you can't take the community with you when you go out or something. You need somebody there who's sort of on your side. So that's one of the – and that will become more important as the contest goes along. So getting somebody in place early is important. As far as getting used to the workload, once you're, you know, strict with your training and paying attention to your diet, however, whatever direction you need to go with it. From there, it's deciding if you want to add in. If you're in the base program, you can decide if you want to add in a specialization. I wouldn't suggest it in the ATS or in the foundation, because the way the volume structure on those, it doesn't really seem to fit, and they weren't built with that in mind. Anyone doing ATS can probably attest to the fact that there's not really a whole lot of room to add much to it. Same with the foundation. So for guys in the base program, there is room to put in a specialization if you want. And like, if you've talked, and again, in the forums, if you talk to any of the previous contestants and winners, they have their own way of doing it and their own way of adding things in. Over the next 3 to 4 weeks is when things will really start to change, and you'll really start to notice stuff. And that's when you got to really sort of buckle down and keep the momentum going. And I guess as another point, as far as adding things in, just always keep in mind of what happened to Pierre and don't overdo it.
Yeah, definitely don't go too crazy, especially if you're newer. The newer you are, the more faith you should just place into how things are just originally laid out and just go with that and just go that direction. It's going to be your best bet overall, because that's the way they would. I mean, John actually went through these things himself and designed them, you know, piece by piece with himself and his training partners, and actually looked at it and said, is this too much? Is this not enough? You know, so it's not only was it designed that way specifically, but it's also been tried, tested, and proven through, you know, what, 2.5 years now or more? Are we 2.5, 3 years now? So it's
been a while, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're proven to work. So if you work them, what ends up happening is not necessarily going to end up being about how well you tweak the system as much as how well you manage the system itself. So that's where the real keys are going to come in. And of course, diet. And I guess we need to really kind of talk about that a little bit, because we've kind of got I'm not going to say a new philosophy, but definitely a more focused and direct philosophy about what we think guys should they should approach getting the body they want.
Yeah, well, Tristan was a good example of that. He came in third in the first contest, but he was experimenting in the first 5 to 6 weeks of the contest with all kinds of other diet strategies. And, you know, he was explaining to me, had a few people around him who had all of these pretty crazy ideas of what he should be doing, and he sort of set himself back a couple of weeks, and then he eventually just came back around to keeping his calories tight and using some eat, stop, eat style philosophies of fasting to help reduce body fat. So again, it's not really all that glamorous. It's pretty simple the way we do it. And everybody, I mean, you can ask any of the previous winners. They just basically kept it tight and then fasted if they needed to fast. And that was about it. So, I mean, Brad and I don't really do specific 24-hour fasts as much as we keep calories to a kind of a daily limit, and then when we hit the limit, the day's over, and it doesn't really matter when you hit that limit. You could hit it all in the morning, or you could take all day to get there. So some days I'd have an 18-hour fast, some days it would be, you know, I wouldn't. Some days it would just be, you know, 12 hours later until I ate again. It's just sort of wherever your calories land. So it's almost the concept of you could almost think of it as meal skipping, but instead of looking at like getting rid of meals, you just kind of look at, once you've eaten up to a certain level, you're just done for the day, and then you just look at the clock and be like, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to start eating again until tomorrow. So that's it. It's pretty simple. And then, you know, we're getting a few questions about water and things like that, and specific macronutrients and all of that don't really matter. And it's even if, for guys who are trying to lose weight, even if you're eating pretty low calorie, like in the, you know, low teens, like, you know, 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 calorie range. Somebody just asked a question about getting enough nutrients. The nutrient requirement for an adult male, if you add it all up, it still only comes to about 1,000 calories a day. So that's just to get all the base nutrients without being in a deficiency. So anything basically above 1,000 calories, if you're eating more or less a mixed diet, you're already got your nutrient requirement for the day. So that's pretty low. So there's nothing to worry about as far as not getting enough, quote, nutrient in. That's kind of it's a catch-all phrase anyways, but there's nothing really to worry about there. So it's just managing the feelings of probably wanting to eat a bit when you're in a deficit state. And then for the guys who are purely looking to build mass, eating to eating up to maintenance should be more than enough. Eating above maintenance probably isn't really going to help a whole lot. And maintenance means BMR plus energy expenditure. So if you're happy with your leanness and you're really not really all that interested in trying to get any leaner, you can eat up to BMR plus energy expenditure, plus lifestyle activity and exercise activity, which in total equals your daily energy expenditure. So if, you know, for example, if your BMR is 1900 plus you do 500 more calories, quote, worth of exercising that day and movement, that puts you at 2400 for the day. So you can just eat 2400 and you won't really gain any fat, and you'll be satisfied eating to that level. And that's more than enough calories to get in all the protein you wanted and whatever else and feel totally satisfied. So those are kind of like the ranges, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, popping up to 3,000 calories a day for almost anybody, unless you're like 6'6 or above, I mean, you probably at that point you're probably going to start gaining fat, and it'll be easy then because you can start measuring your waist and you'll know it. I mean, that's the funny part about it. It's like the anti BS meter right there. You take out your tape measure, you measure your waist. If your waist is going up faster than the rest of your body, you know, because obviously if you're lifting, I mean, it is possible for your waist to go up if you're doing, you know, compound lifts, like squats and deads and stuff. But
minimally, your waist is not going to expand the way the rest of the muscles will.
Yeah, if you gain 6 inches on your waist, don't fool yourself.
Yeah, well, even if you gain a full inch on it, that's not muscle.
Yeah, it's pretty significant. So, all right, well, now that we kind of went into that, let's transition back down to kind of the decision that we made as far as the overall kind of, I guess, not theme, but just flow pattern of what people should do. Like once they figure out where they're at, you know, whether they're thin, you know, overweight, you know, average. Let's talk about what the new philosophy is, because, like I said, we get lots of questions about building muscle and losing fat at the same time.
So the point is, the bulk and cut philosophy of bodybuilders, we think is backwards. We think it should be cut and bulk, and not bulk in the traditional sense, but in the it's really hard, and me and Brad had a really good discussion about this the other day. It's really hard for you to really know what's going on with your, quote, muscles and how they're developing if they're just covered in fat all the time. Your only feedback really is strength, but strength is very transient and very exercise specific and, you know, based on your energy levels. There's all kinds of things that go into that. So if strength is not a good enough indicator, you need to – some of it is the feedback of seeing your muscles. But if they're covered in a layer of fat, you have none of that feedback either. So – and what's the point of any of this anyways? It's to build a better looking and better shaped body in the first place. So to actually sort of start off on the right foot, our philosophy is for guys who need to get lean and have excess fat, your number one goal should be getting rid of that fat just so you can even see where you're starting. Because without getting rid of the fat, you won't really know what your shape is. You won't really know what kind of base muscle mass you have. I mean, you don't even really know what your real true shoulder measurement is because there's just too much fat, you know, distorting it. So the concept – we have the reverse concept. It's like get to a realistic and a low body fat percentage where it does show off what shape you are – what shape you're currently in, and then you can work from there. So it's kind of the reverse. You don't just build up and build up and build up, then cut down and see what you got. It's kind of like cut down, see where you are, and then work from there. And then that might show – I mean, who knows? That might really show off. Maybe you're doing the base workout and you don't realize that, you know, the specialization you're doing is not the one you need just based on your fat storage patterns. Like, we don't store fat exactly uniformly from person to person. There's general things we do. Like, most guys store it a lot in their gut and, you know, a little bit less up top. But some guys could store it differently where the fat storage pattern distorts what muscles you think are bigger than not. So some guys may have an artificially bigger looking chest just because of the way they store fat or their back or something like that. So our philosophy is get rid of the fat, get down to a lean state where you can kind of really see what shape you have, and then from there work from there.
Yeah, there's way too much emotional or emotion invested in the whole, you know, and bulk and cut. And you can see this and just even in bodybuilders and talking to them, how they hate cutting because it makes them feel, I mean, they just feel like they're shrinking, and just listening to just the vernacular is almost depressing. But it's kind of the same thing. You know, you look at them from last year to this year, and you're talking a 2 pound difference on a 225 pound guy who's been doing all this stuff. And so it's kind of the same thing with us and myself the same way. I mean, you're probably overestimating the amount of muscle mass you have. And so you need to get clear and really buck up and understand what the reality of the situation is, and get a baseline, a true baseline that you know you can measure against. Because if you don't have that, all you have is a moving goalpost. I mean, it's kind of the same reason I don't think body fat percentages is a good indicator of anything, other than kind of some basic relative stuff. But even then, because you can fool it, because the what are you comparing it against? You're comparing it against something else that can move at the same time, you know, based on transient water, which can change from day to day. So you're kind of, you don't have anything like solid or standard, like a place that you can say, all right, this is where I've started. And that's, this is the baseline. You know, this
that's the point of the muscle index. And that's the point of measuring. That's the whole point of our measurements. You go off of your waist and your shoulders based on your height, and then looking at your weight, and then you'll know at a particular waist and shoulder ratio, you'll have the weight that goes with it. So weight is irrelevant if you don't compare it to the ratio that you're at that weight. Like, I can, you know, anybody can be 220 pounds, but what's your AI at 220, like 1.1? Then maybe you want to fix that.
Yeah, I was pretty cool at 215. I think I had shoulders of 53, and my waist was like 40.
Right. So yeah. See what I mean? And aesthetically, it's not going to look right. So.
And I never thought my waist was 40. I was going by my pant size. I was still able to fit in 36s.
Mm-hmm.
But when I took the tape measure up there, I about threw up.
Right. And it's not like that's a lean 40 waist. That's smooth, right? Like it's.
Oh yeah, I was in the shower one day. This is what made me get to the point where I was like, all right, something's got to change. I was in the shower, like washing, and I felt it, and my skin, like I couldn't pull it. It like didn't stretch, and I was like, oh man, this is. It just felt like really tight, but not in a good way. And I was like, oh god, something's got to change. So but that was the thing, is that your measurements don't really lie, and. I didn't realize I was as big as I was. It's kind of one of those things, like we talk about. You can fool yourself into a lot of things until you kind of really get clear on where you are. That's another reason for the get lean. The other thing too is that if you're already lean, you know, you have one decision to make, and that's if you're looking to get any leaner or if you're fine. So basically, the big thing is to decide how lean you want to be, get there, and then. Go up. So obviously for us, we've got a waist measurement that kind of fits the bill or is kind of close to it. So that's usually a good starting point for most people. But the other part about it is burning fat is harder from in my opinion, it's harder than building muscle. I mean, just the whole process is harder. There's more pressures. I mean, you're depriving yourself of stuff. It's tough. So it actually kind of gets you mentally.
Well, they're opposite. They're opposite actions. They're opposite. One of them's an active output and exertion of energy. The other one is a restraint of an urge.
Yeah.
Right. So like restraining eating is a completely different psychological sort of effort versus going to the gym and actively pushing weights around. So yeah. And the pushing the weights around has a very like. Moving forward, I can do something about this. It's very tangible. Like you can really feel that happening. And you're exerting it. Like you're actually exerting your will on that thing. Whereas restraining eating is a much different feeling where you're kind of fighting an urge. So it's an ever present. That one's ever present. That one's like the minute you wake up until the minute you go to sleep. That one's like you're kind of working against it or work, you're having to work with it the whole day. Whereas the gym, you just need to get worked up for that hour and a bit, and that's it. And yeah, so it's one of them is like an hour a day, the other one's 24, or at least all your waking hours.
Yeah, the one version of it is therapeutic. The other one's almost torture for a lot of people, at least in the beginning, because that's the other thing too. I guess
we're not really sugarcoating it. Like
no, not at all. I mean,
put it this way: eating to lose weight is basically unnatural. It doesn't happen by accident. There's no situation where you can think of where someone's just like, holy man, you know, a month later I was 10 pounds lighter. Just happened. Like, that just never happens.
Unless there's something wrong with them.
Well, no, you need to be sick. Something has to happen. Like, you need to be, like, you're either emotionally sick or physically sick and you lose your appetite. But a loss of appetite is an indicator that something's wrong. Like, that's not a good thing. That's always something that's wrong. So, in a clinical medical sort of setting. But so forcing yourself to lose weight, it's a forceful effort. And part of it is just dealing with the feelings of, it's a restraint thing. You actually have to kind of fight it on a daily basis. So it's not quite the same as just going and exerting your will around the gym for an hour.
Yeah. You had an interesting analogy with the bricks again.
Okay. So I know. Okay. So if anyone's listened before, they've heard my analogy about building muscles more like inflating water balloons. So I don't like the idea of calling build muscle as much as like you're inflating them. But building fat is like putting bricks down, and they just sit there until you burn them off. So the image everyone has of building muscle, where you like literally layer on a new, like, you know, layer on another layer of bricks and they're just sitting there. That's actually how we store fat. That when you build muscle, it's more like pumping water into a balloon that's constantly leaking out, and then you just have to keep pumping it back in. So your muscles are in this transient. They're only as big as you can inflate them for as often as you can work out, and as heavy as you can work out, and as more as you can progress. So you can inflate them a bit more. But you know, anyone who breaks their arm, it immediately deflates when you stop using it. So it's your muscles are in a transient inflationary state based on how much you can inflate them. And you always have to assume they're always trying to go back to their pre-inflated size. Whereas building fat by adding, you know, eating too much, that is literally laying bricks on your body that will never disappear unless you actively burn them off. So right. The image most of you have about building muscle is actually how we build fat.
Right. So a lot of people feel that fat storage is the transient thing, and the muscle is more
fat,
the permanent.
If you put on, you know, 10 pounds of fat, and you never undereat, and you never eat off or get rid of, or burn enough calories to burn those 10 pounds of fat off, they'll be on your body until the day you die. And then they're not going anywhere because you're just never going to use them. So that literally is adding a static, like literally that there's a brick of fat sitting on you and it's going nowhere until you burn into it and burn it off. So but that's not how muscles are. If you pump up a muscle and you stimulate some, you know, muscle quote growth, and it's hydrated and, you know, it expands, the minute you stop using it, it goes right back down to its pre-expansion size. So it's like muscles are always going to go back down to their normal size if you don't prod them to get bigger. And you have to do that constantly forever.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing about I was thinking about this the other day, you know, about steroid use and all these other things. You kind of have to make the decision about what's sustainable for the long term. I know we don't talk about making, you know, lifestyle changes and all of this stuff, but you almost have to make that decision. You know, even at the beginning, if you're overweight, make the decision on what you think is a sustainable leanness, because obviously you want to be able to sustain it and not go up and down, because going up and down, you know, if there are women listening, especially not for women, because, you know, it stretches their skin out, especially up top. But then you have to make the decision on, you know, what's sustainable as far as, you know, muscle, because you have to live in with a perpetual pump to keep it there, right? So if you go the steroid route, well, you just know that if you want to be that big at 50 years old, you're going to have to still be on roids.
Yep. And then what dose, right?
Exactly. So it's that's the other thing about it. You make that decision. Think about it. And you're like, okay, well, how big do I want to be? All right, what do I need to do to get there? It's not like you like a rocket ship or whatever. You put the rocket fuel in, you go up there, and you stay up there.
No, you got to keep fueling it. It's
yeah.
You have to assume muscles are always. I mean, if you need a thought in your head to think about it clearly, muscles are always going to go back down to their pre-workout size if you don't keep working out.
Yeah.
And the proof is, anytime you stop working a muscle, that's what it does.
Right.
So, I mean, it takes time. Like, the longer you've trained, the longer it'll take for it to regress back to its pre-training size. But again, we know from casting, from research from broken limbs and casting that, you know, as soon as a muscle's immobile, if you just lie and don't do anything, it will shrink and shrink and shrink back down to its base size, which is not very big.
Yeah, that's kind of another reason why we've really been looking into a lot of the sweet spot type stuff. You know, I've been doing some research just myself and looking in forums and seeing what people are doing. And I mean, there's a difference between what's a convergent solution and what's a divergent solution. And nobody really ever talks about this. And I was thinking about doing that at some point, but you know, at some point there's, you know, when we talk about the bulking, cutting and stuff, you know, generally, it's probably going to be a convergent solution to, you know, a certain point. But for a lot of people, I mean, if making the decision to only do this, like you'll see people talk about, well, I'm only going to work out for 3 months until I burn the fat off, or until I, you know, build up, and then, you know, I'll be okay because that's where I'll be. And it's kind of a divergent solution because you don't. Well, actually, it's convergent because it converges back down to where you were. But it diverges away from the goal you actually had. So, you know, you see diet talk about like diets and things like that, with the long-term research, like when they did like the 12-month study on like Atkins versus South Beach versus mm-hmm. all these other ones. What you found was, yes, yeah, some of the solutions may have, you know, they may have lost body weight faster in the beginning, but every single one of them converged to the exact same point at the end of 12 months.
Yeah, and then the only consistent finding was less calories.
Yeah, calorie load, exactly.
It didn't matter what pattern they ate in or what macronutrients they ate in. Like, I don't know if anyone is aware that the fat loss research is definitive, 100% clear that the only thing that produces weight loss is less calories, and the style that you eat in is completely irrelevant. Like that is a case closed. The jury is done. It's shut. Like that is understood scientifically. I'm amazed that people still think there's another theory to it. But you know, the scientific community's, it's over. Like that, there's no debate there. All they're debating now is what's the most effective way to, like, keep people kind of consistently eating less calories until they've lost enough weight. But there's no debate that that's all it is.
Yeah, it's more the hunger and consistency tricks.
It's like what kind of social support? Who do you like? How do you recruit people? Like, how do you keep them on track? What are the psychological barriers? It's all that stuff, right? It's nothing to do with the rest of that, the actual nuts and bolts of what to eat and how much to eat and when to eat. Well, obviously how much, but it has nothing to do with meal patterns and things like that. So it's sort of, I don't know, it must be maddening watching for researchers in those fields to watch people fumble through all of these weird things when the answer's been clear for so long.
Right. Yeah. It takes a while to kind of get a handle on it because I understand you're reading it all the time, everywhere, every magazine. I mean, I was in the gym today. I like thumbing through the magazines just to see what people are saying. And like literally it was everything across the board. I mean, how can so many different diets get people results, right?
But I mean, they all can if they get you to eat less.
Right. I mean, that's the funny thing about it. You know, you look at every single diet program and every one of them has, you know, some type of before and after. You know, people have gotten results. But how could that be? You know, how can a high-carb diet work when the low-carb guy says it can't work? You know, how can, you know, zone diet work when, you know,
the blood type diet's supposed to work. Yeah, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's just, if you even stop just for a second and thought about, like, how different each one is, that none of them could possibly work. Only one of them could work, and all the others would have to fail. So, and the fact that they all can work, and it's already been studied head to head. It's just calorie load. So,
yeah.
Anyways, I think we've beaten that one to death. I think everyone listening should know that.
Yeah, but there's new people coming in that we can have fun with. So.
Sure.
It's all right. What else? What else we got? Any new things coming up that we need to discuss about contest or any hangups, you know, that people might run into? I mean, I think the first 2 weeks. All right, let me say this. Because you're in a contest and there's a kind of a definitive time frame, you can afford to be a lot more aggressive. If you have to lose, you can be a lot more aggressive. That also means socially, if you can withdraw and want to withdraw, if that helps. We normally don't recommend that for daily, everyday life. But because there is a definitive timeline, I mean, some people find, like I do, I find that if I kind of socially withdraw, it helps out a lot because I can get focused on other stuff. It may not help you, but a lot of people that we've kind of talked to that are, within the contest and that are winners, it does seem like they socially withdraw a little bit. And that's okay. I mean,
the other side of that is include the people you'll be with socially in your goal and keep them on your side.
Sure.
So if you go out to the bar and like they know that, let's say you've got some friends there and they know you're in a contest, they won't push a drink on you. They won't force you to eat dessert. They won't have them on your team. So like you can still enjoy the company and do everything you normally do, but they're on your side.
Right. Yeah, but don't fool yourself either.
What's that? Yeah, don't fool yourself. But the reason is socially, and I've already done this as a little blog thing, it's impossible to find a social event that doesn't involve consuming something, either drink or food or both. It's right. I posed that as a question on my blog and no one can answer. So, besides playing some sort of sport, that's it. So if you're going to be social, there's probably going to be something to consume around, and since you're in a contest, you kind of need to pay attention to it more than anyone else around you. So if you get them on your side, they'll give you a slight nudge in the right direction instead of the wrong direction.
Yeah, I just have this saying, and I say it time and time again. Any plan that's based 100% or that's based on willpower has got 100% chance of failure. I mean, pretty much, because what's going to happen is
It's the difference between situational control and controlling yourself. So if you know that you can't handle being around a certain situation, and that you'll stray from what you need to do. Just don't put yourself in that situation.
Yeah. But why agonize anyway? It's like there's like ice cream in the freezer right now, and the only reason it's there is because it's one of the things Elle can eat because of her her throat and stuff like that, because it's sore and it's sitting there and it's haunting me. Right? And I know it, and I'm like, and so I'll like go and I'll like get a little bit of it, but I'll stop, and it's like, it's the worst.
It'd be so much easier if it wasn't there. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I just want to take it and like boot it into the woods. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, don't put undue stress on yourself that you don't need. There are a lot of easy decisions that you can make ahead of time so that you don't have to even deal with that stuff. And like I say, we can talk, life and all this stuff later, but specifically right now we're talking contest. There's really no room for error, because if you slip up, guess what? Somebody else ain't slipping up.
The goal here is to place, if not win, and get some money and, be proud of the pictures and look back and, I did that. It's only 12 weeks. It's actually kind of short. When you actually, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that long.
Yeah. So, exactly. And it gives you another reason around people, or an excuse, so to say. If people are asking you why, you're not coming out or things like that. I mean, it just gives you something to off put it on other than just telling people to F off. You know what I mean? That doesn't work too well with your friends all the time, or else you wouldn't have too many friends. So, but yeah, that's kind of the way I've been looking at it lately that's why I actually like the contest, because it does give people something to kind of off put and kind of blame what they're trying to do on. And that way they can be a little bit more extreme and feel comfortable being a little bit more extreme.
Right.
And not feeling like that they're kind of losing out anywhere else. Because, I mean, let's face it, you get a check in the mail. I mean, who's griping then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, it's if you just finishing the contest, even if you don't place, it doesn't, you're in such rare ground for anyone who's even tried that. Most people have never done this sort of thing. So anyone who's doing it, you know, make it to the end, and you're already in a tiny, tiny group of people who've done that.
Yeah, you start to realize just how much farther you can go with everything than you thought. And that's really kind of empowering, because you find out that you've got a lot more wiggle room than you thought. I mean, mm-hmm. calorie wise, I mean, you go a couple of days where I've done it a couple of days where you've got 500 calories and you're creeping down, and you start to notice that, you know, your strength levels, they might drop a little bit, but I mean, you don't have like your muscles sagging off of you and all this stuff. So all these kind of residual fears and this residual baggage that's just out there, you kind of get to confront head on.
Oh, and then you live it, and you're like, oh, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, and then you get to laugh at everybody else who's worried about all that crap.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I think we're good here.
Yeah.
What do we need? Okay, so over the next 2 weeks, we'll figure out a way to collect questions for the next call that's contest specific.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing too, just wanted to bring up really quickly. What we'll be doing from now on into the near off future is we'll be operating in themes. So every other week will be, you know, a podcast, but it'll be themed into one of three themes, depending on what. Like in January, we'll start talking more nutrition. Actually, no, take that back. Probably in November, December, we'll talk more nutrition because it makes sense. That'll be the theme for those months, obviously because of the holidays and stuff like that. When we get into January, we'll talk more about some of the other residual things like injury prevention, you know, things that have to do with the body stressors, you know, longevity, stuff like that. And then back in March, we'll start talking about the exercise and muscle building once again. So we just kind of run in those themes, and then in between, so we'll do four podcasts like that every other week, and then in between, it'll be, if we're in the middle of a contest, there'll be Q&A where we answer a bunch of questions about the contest, and they can be, you know, any questions. They don't have to be necessarily be themed to what we're talking about. And then after the contest, if we're in between contests, we'll be doing interviews with people that have won, because, you know, we feel like you get a really good perspective of what people are doing that are just like you. And obviously, you know, it's not us telling you what to do. It's I've done this. We're living it. So we get a lot more interactivity, a lot more structure, and hopefully you guys will enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah, that's great.
So, all right, you got anything else?
Nope.
Nope, cool. All right, guys. Well, thanks for stopping by once again. For John Barbin, I'm Brad Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.